And the Collar City Growers team traveled down to Ellenville to chat with Andrew Faust about his philosophies born from his experience as a permaculture educator.
We're here in this naturally built classroom that's within a huge outdoor classroom.
Yeah.
And it's called the Center for Bioregional Living. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Well, I started the concept, the Center for Bioregional Living, back in 1998 when I was teaching at a free school in Pennsylvania, Upatinas. And there I wanted to attract a student base who wanted to study permaculture, biodynamics, natural building, organic gardening, who were going to high school. And so I created the Center for Bioregional Living as a department at that school so I could start to attract my own student base to come in to study permaculture, go with me. And I studied permaculture in 1996 at the farm in Tennessee mm-hmm. with Peter Bain and Chuck Marsh, who started Earth Haven, which is outside of Black
the
Mountain.
Farm, like yeah, the farm. Ina
May. Ina May and really? Stephen Gaskin, yeah.
There
and that's in our first design. The design for our PDC was for a combination old folks home and birthing center at the farm, because Ina May Gaskin wanted to bring together both ends of the life spectrum and said, well, we should really have like a hospice old folks home right next to the birthing center. And that, and he called it Rosinante. And they had bought a property, Stephen and Ina May had bought a property next to the farm. And so for our PDC, that was what we did our design for. We walked that 200 acres. We did a concept design for a combination birthing center, old folks home. And, you know, those people have been super inspirational and influential. And in some ways, most importantly, what they influenced me to do as a teacher was take permaculture on the road and bring it out of being in the closet as far as this kind of introverted subculture philosophy that only the initiated understood. And oftentimes we're preaching it in the mid-90s to be a tool for creating an eco-village. And there really wasn't much vision beyond that. So when I studied permaculture in the mid-90s, my teachers were teaching it from this perspective of, when you all graduate, you're going to start your eco-village, and that's when you'll really be doing permaculture. And then to fast forward, when I decided to create my own homestead in West Virginia to learn more about permaculture, which was in 1999, I decided by then, the way I put it is, I knew what I knew and I knew what I didn't know. I knew what I didn't know far outstripped what I did know about a lot of the things that my teachers were really getting us excited about was natural building. In the late 90s, like straw bale, earth and plaster, passive solar houses. It goes back to the Greeks and the Romans and the pyramids, all that cool stuff. They liked the sun. All it means is paying attention to it.
The sun works.
I call it the biggest thing going on planet Earth. Right? It's like physicists say it's 99.6% of the mass of our solar system is in the sun. 99.6%. So that means 0.4% of all the dust that settled into Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, Uranus, Pluto, all those, that's 0.6%. Of us.
And then what are we?
So it's big and it's important to acknowledge it. And everything on the planet ends up making sense if you paid attention to where the sun rises and sets on the shortest day and the longest day. Ends up not making sense if you didn't pay attention to those things. So you can end up really with a frustrating kind of environment if you don't realize that you are actually on a planet in outer space where there are things that are measurable and empirical and define whether you're going to have an easier time living or a tougher time living, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, permaculture is about aligning human behaviors, human ways of living with how the planet works and understanding more systemically how does the earth work. And it took me a while of sitting with it to realize that that was the most accessible way to bring what is a useful set of tools to a society that's skeptical of anything that is more qualitative, intuitive, holistic. And permaculture has a lot of what we would call feminine modalities of knowing that in a society that's very masculine dominated, it has to do a certain amount of proving itself to be considered worth paying attention to. And what I was finding was this message of create an eco-village was not a philosophy that was going to compel people who were inspired by it to prove it to the mainstream society. It was, in fact, further encouraging this kind of like escapist response to what is a highly dogmatic and oppressive cultural paradigm.
Right.
And is a reasonable response to that oppression to say, I'm just going to get away from this. It's healthy, it's smart, and it's often what we need to do in order to rebuild our strength to be able to go back into the fray of it and actually feel like we've got the wherewithal to do some good work in the world. So I think there's a balance between healing yourself and knowing how to create a microcosm that's truly therapeutic for what you need so that you can do positive work in the world, and thinking that the work is to escape from the world. Those are two different frameworks to come at. What is the objective, say, of educational process like permaculture? And the Center for Bioregional Living as a umbrella term really has been about how do we create a different culture, a culture of place, a culture that's more by the people, for the people, that's paying attention to where we are on the planet. Practically speaking, I like to call it retrofitting the infrastructure to be more regionally self-reliant, because that's something that I think is useful and not enough people are talking about, the need to take how we produce energy, how we produce food, and to localize it in ways that are definitely at the very least beyond organic, and saying we need to get chemicals out, we need to get industrial systems out, and we need to look at how do we train people up to really be more locally self-reliant. And this, my goal, our goal with the Center for Bioregional Living has really been to be a training program that gives more people the skills to feel like they can create a better life for themselves that doesn't depend upon so many of these unethical, petroleum-drenched ways right now that people are making incomes and just figuring out how to live, you know.
Yeah, I think we're an example of taking that, and I can say that we've definitely started to create on our own a better life for ourselves, using a lot of the tools that you passed on to me, and then we took that enthusiasm and just kept running with it, you know, and here we are coming back again.
Mm-hmm.
It's been extremely helpful. Just all the interesting challenges of the retrofit.
The retrofit.
You know?
Yeah.
Because we're not starting with a clean slate.
Right. It's far more challenging in a lot of ways. And obviously we always encourage the both and philosophy, meaning nothing is exclusive of anything else. You don't want to get dogmatically attached. You know, sometimes starting from scratch, if that's an option, great. But more often than not, in this country, retrofitting is going to be a more accessible option and make a lot more sense. You know, sometimes a contamination legacy is going to be so problematic that you're not going to want to deal with it. And other times it's going to be worth going through the nitty gritty of remediating and reclaiming damaged landscapes and, you know, taking on that work of inhabiting places that have been neglected or abused by previous generations.
What's a way that people can find out more about what you've got coming up here on the property and tell us about the city?
Yeah, sure.
The city too.
Yeah, thanks. We have a class right now that's starting tomorrow. That's the Permaculture Design Certification course. We estimate 500 plus graduates through that program in the last 10 years in New York City. We've been doing it twice a year. And very unique program because we deal a lot with water pollution, air pollution, what it's like doing it in an urban landscape. I like to sort of joke, but honestly, more in truth, say that many of my colleagues seem to have abandoned 50% of the world's population because 50% of them live in cities. And very little of the content of this discipline really pays much attention to how we're going to design cities to actually be people-friendly and eco-friendly. Not just have cities that are a petrochemical nightmare that as soon as people want to breathe, they run away from screaming to the hinterlands, which is basically what New Yorkers do as a pattern. And so we work with them a lot to help them find their little escape pod in the country so that then they'll have the wherewithal to continue to stay involved in the cultural change that's so alive and fermenting in New York, which is why we love teaching there. And really, to me, it's a little counterintuitive perhaps to an audience that might be listening to this and thinking, oh, well, permaculture, probably all that they want to do is spend time in the country raising animals and growing carrots. The reality is I quickly began to see that social change and the desire to change our society and our cultural values was something I could do arguably more effectively in the midst of a city. And especially New York City has a unique culture of people who want to create change. Many people who go to New York actually go there for very positive reasons, because they're inspired to self-create a new direction for who they are and for the world. So many people who go to New York are actually there for very positive reasons. They may eventually feel a little ground down and not as inspired as years go by. But to generalize, a lot of people who are in New York and Philadelphia and a lot of urban centers really have migrated there because they're artists, they're creatives, they're makers, they're entrepreneurs, they're restaurateurs. And so a lot of the real market aspects of a more ecological economy are actually manifesting in New York City than they are often in the more rural hinterlands. And so what we're doing there is really helping people realize that this positive vision for change is something that's very accessible, very doable. It's happening right now. It's more a matter of connecting the dots, of starting to help people realize, like, well, how can we improve air quality, water quality, and become more energy self-reliant, and become more food self-reliant? Because what's important, I've been finding as a thinker in these fields, is to keep it from being siloed ivory towers of specialization in the liberal left, where we've got people who are just about food justice, and people who are just about social justice, and people who are just about water pollution, and people who are just about political reform. But we actually need all of that stuff simultaneously. Mm-hmm. We need women's rights championed more. We need water quality, air quality, political reform, local food self-reliance. And one of the most important things that we're working a lot on is renewable energy grids for the Northeast that are decentralized and appropriately scaled. And that's another solution set that you won't find people often really going much into in this type of education, because they're really not gearing up their students to feel like they can then mobilize and get on the planning board and have things to offer at meetings that are actually municipal scale solutions. They're being educated in these micro scale systems, which, again, I've said, I think is a bit of an overshoot. It's easy to educate people on the micro scale, and we do that. Mm-hmm. But it's more interesting and useful, I think, to take it to the macro scale as an educator and then bring it back to the micro scale, so that you give people the training wheels, you hold their hands, we mentor them. And then after 2 years, they can really like go from a fledgling to being able to launch off into creating that. I often say what we really need in the world more than policy change and more rules is more people offering the solutions that are viable to people. If you think there's a product that you'd love to see available that isn't available, a certain type of food, a certain type of baby clothing, a certain type of cleaner, right? Make it available. Mm-hmm. Or is there a service that you think should be made available that you're finding largely isn't available? You know, conceivably, there's a real market for that. Because it's very easy to think that we just need to tell people what the right thing is to do. And that's a bit of a misnomer, because the reality is after you tell people the right thing to do, you often need to be able to offer it to them as something that they can now not have to do themselves. And one of the big mistakes in my experience of permaculture has been this notion that people are going to automatically do the right thing if you just tell them what the right thing is. Well, the misunderstanding around that is that they may not have the means to do the right thing that you've just told them. So, to be specific, Bergen Watershed Group in Bergen County, New Jersey, met with me and were very chagrined that they had done all these educations on organic lawn care for the residents of Bergen County in Jersey. And they were upset that basically they hadn't seen much mobilization on the information, meaning people weren't converting their lawns to being organic. And I said, well, did you partner with anybody who has an organic lawn care service in Bergen County when you did those public information events? And they said, no. And so there's this thing where often liberal nonprofit groups think all you need to do is educate people. Not necessarily. Because you can educate till the end of the day, but if you don't actually offer a financially viable way for them to just pay someone else to do it, many Americans aren't going to do it. And the reality is there's a lot of people who, if you have like a new contractor service, a new energy system, a new waste system, and you offer that, you're going to start to create the new economy, create the solutions. So that's a lot of what our students and what we really are inspiring people and saying, let's bring the new economy in the form of entrepreneurship.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn. What's the your website that people can visit?
PermacultureNewYork.com.
That was Andrew Faust of the Center for Bioregional Living in Allenville, and Christian Grigorhaskos of Collard City Growers. If you'd like to learn more about how the sanctuary is retrofitting their infrastructure in ways that Faust hopes to inspire, be sure to join in the fun at Collard City Growers starting this spring. You can stay up to date on upcoming permaculture-themed workshops by visiting the workshops tab at mediasanctuary.org.